promoting scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. Patrick Wood here for Technocracy News and Trends, Editor-in-Chief, and welcome to the broadcast today. You might be aware, if you have been in an airport recently, that things like facial recognition technology is beginning to show up in increasing amounts, not only implemented by the TSA itself, but also by the airlines. Today's story addresses that. The title is Federal Privacy Board Eyes TSA Biometrics. This is an interesting story, because it's a little offbeat. And I wrote at the top, other than lull the public into thinking someone's protecting them, the Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board has done little, if anything, to stem the rise in facial recognition systems around the nation. The article states, a government bipartisan privacy oversight board recently toured Transportation Security Administration's facial recognition pilot program in the Las Vegas McCarran International Airport as part of a comprehensive review of the Homeland Security Department's expanding biometrics projects. The Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board, which grew out of a recommendation from the 9/11 Commission, initiated a deep dive project on facial recognition and aviation security earlier this year when insiders recognized how TSA and Customs and Border Protection were ramping up the introduction of biometric and facial recognition technology at various points throughout the passengers' airport experiences. On top of the pilot at McCarran, the board is also looking into other facial recognition deployments across the TSA and CBP, including the biometric entry and exit programs running at various airports for international departures. Every project the agency is looking into is part of the Homeland Security Department's effort to eventually use biometrics to verify nearly all departing commercial air travelers over the course of the next few years. Yes, you heard that right. All passengers on commercial air flights will be monitored with facial recognition if the DHS gets its way. The article continues, each deployment raises different issues, different operational considerations, different potential privacy concerns. Adam Klein, the board's chairman, told NextGov, it's hard to tell at this point what is the most consequential aspect of this because these technologies are so new and because the agencies are feeling their way through this as well. The chairman of this committee, by the way, Adam Klein, is a member of the elitist Council on Foreign Relations. That should tell you something right off the bat as to where this investigation is going to go, because, as you know, the Council on Foreign Relations is one of the top promoters of globalization in the world. The article continues, the board's ultimate mission is to help the government balance preventing terrorism with protecting public privacy. At its inception, it was set up to serve as a counterbalance to other recommendations the 9/11 Commission suggested following the 2001 terrorist attacks, including creating the Director of National Intelligence, which of course did happen, the National Counterterrorism Center, and increased information sharing amongst intelligence agencies and between intelligence and law enforcement. They thought that increased power calls for increased oversight, Klein said. In 2007, Congress reestablished a board as a bipartisan statutory agency within the executive branch. To date, its five members must be appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. As the present board works to develop a detailed review over the course of the next year, Klein said it ultimately aims to assess how biometric technology is being leveraged across America to verify passengers' identities through each phase of their air travel journeys. Facial recognition is popping up, so to speak, throughout the aviation process at different airports around the country, but there's also increasing public awareness and a lot of momentum within Homeland Security to move in this direction, Klein said. And given the important questions surrounding it, and given also the importance of aviation security as its mission, we thought this would be an appropriate place for us to get involved and take a look at it. Well, guys, I'm so glad you're in there taking a look at it. I only wish that you weren't part of the same fox coven that's promoting this stuff in the first place. And indeed, this seems to be the case. I looked at the website for this agency, the Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board. It is an official government agency. It has their own website. It's one of the lamest websites I've seen in government. It's not totally empty, but just about. Not much useful information there either. So this is a case where you have the foxes watching the hens again. And even though they do make motions to protect the public and the public interest, they've done nothing to stem the rise of facial recognition throughout the country. Cities, on the other hand, like San Francisco, have outlawed facial recognition. Other cities are following suit. But the federal government seems to be content to just watch the parade go by, do nothing to prevent facial recognition from being used to create a total awareness, total surveillance police state like we have in China. These guys simply don't get it. The next story will make you want to hold on to your arm. The title of the story is Warning: DNA-based vaccines are straight ahead. My friend John Rappaport wrote this article for Children's Health Defense, and I wrote at the top of this before his excellent article. Big Pharma intends to create DNA-based vaccines that will literally change your body's DNA. With mandatory vaccinations increasingly being legislated across the country, and they are, this bodes for a very dangerous health future. Technocrats and transhumans occupy the same philosophy that science can and will solve everything. Creating humanity 2.0, or H+, has long been a bold goal: to conquer death through immortality. Modifying human DNA is a prime element in that quest, and here we go. John writes, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, that is NIAID, has launched efforts to create a vaccine that would protect people from most flu strains all at once with a single shot. Over the years, I've written many articles refuting claims that vaccines are safe and effective, but we'll put all that aside for the moment and follow the bouncing ball. Massachusetts Senator and big spender Ed Markey has introduced a bill that would shovel no less than $1 billion, billion with a B, toward the Universal Flu Vaccine Project. Here's the sentence from the NIAID press release that mentions one of the several research approaches. Quote, NIAID Vaccine Research Center scientists have initiated phase 1 out of 2 studies of a universal flu vaccine strategy that includes an investigational DNA-based vaccine called a DNA prime. This is quite troubling, if you know what the phrase DNA vaccine means. It refers to what the experts are touting as a next generation of immunizations. Instead of injecting a piece of virus into a person in order to stimulate the immune system, synthesized genes would be shot into the body. This is not traditional vaccination anymore. It's gene therapy. In any such method where genes are edited, deleted, added, no matter what the pros say, there are always unintended consequences, to use their polite phrase. The ripple effects scramble the genetic structure in numerous unknown ways. Here's the inconvenient truth about DNA vaccines. They will permanently alter your DNA. The reference is the New York Times from March 15, 2015, Protection Without a Vaccine, the article was. It describes the frontier of research, the use of synthetic genes to protect against disease while changing the genetic makeup of humans. This is not science fiction, John writes. By delivering synthetic genes into the muscles of the experimental monkeys, the scientists are essentially re-engineering the animals to resist disease. The sky's the limit, said Michael Farzan, an immunologist at Scripps and lead author of the new study. The first human trial based on this strategy, called immunoprophylaxis by gene transfer, or IGT, is underway, and several new ones are planned, and this was a few years ago. IGT is altogether different from traditional vaccination. It is instead a form of gene therapy. Scientists isolate the genes that produce powerful antibodies against certain diseases and then synthesize artificial versions. The genes are placed into viruses and injected into human tissue, usually muscle. Here's the punchline, he writes. The viruses invade human cells with their DNA payloads, and the synthetic gene is incorporated into the recipient's own DNA. If all goes well, the new genes instruct the cells to begin manufacturing powerful antibodies. Read that again. Quote, the synthetic gene is incorporated into the recipient's own DNA. Close quote. Alteration of the human genetic makeup, not just a visit. Permanent residence. And once a person's DNA is changed, he will live with that change and all of the ripple effects in his genetic makeup for the rest of his life. The Times article taps Dr. David Baltimore for an opinion. Quote, still, Dr. Baltimore says that he envisions that some people might be leery of a vaccination strategy that means altering their own DNA, even if it prevents a potentially fatal disease. You think that anybody would be concerned about changing their own DNA? Well, John writes, yes, some people might be leery if they have two or three working brain cells. This is genetic roulette with a loaded gun. Anyone and everyone on Earth injected with a DNA vaccine will undergo permanent and unknown genetic changes. And the further implications are clear. Vaccines can be used as a cover for the injection of any and all genes, whose actual purpose is re-engineering humans in far-reaching ways. The emergence of this Frankenstein technology is paralleled by a shrill push to mandate vaccines across the board for both children and adults. The pressure and propaganda are planet-wide. The freedom and the right to refuse vaccine has always been vital. It is more vital than ever now. It means the right to preserve your inherent DNA. That's the end of his story. I can only comment that this is indeed a global push for mandated vaccines. It's not just in America. It's not just in a few cities or hospitals or school districts. It's all over the planet. That tells you something right there, that there is a globally orchestrated push by some individual or companies to get mandated vaccines in place everywhere. And right behind it now is coming this new class of vaccines that will modify the DNA of the recipients. Technocrats believe that science can solve any problem known to man. They're wrong, of course, but they see no problem with this kind of technology. They see no ethical barrier. They see no impediment, no reason to stop the research at all, not even to ask people what they think. Would this be a good idea? Well, I guarantee you, you'll never get a notice in the mail asking for your opinion. But if you do, I suggest you voice it and tell them not just no, but heck no. You're never going to stick a needle in my arm, period. Our last story today is much bigger in size, in terms of physical size. It has to do with dam destruction, DAM. That is, dams that generate hydroelectric power that serve farmers and cities with millions of people. to provide water and irrigation for farmers. The title of this story is Green Ecozealots Sue to Remove the Massive Glen Canyon Dam on Colorado River. This is just amazing. I wrote at the top of this just to give you an idea of where this is going. Former Secretary of the Interior, Bruce Babbitt, that was under President Bill Clinton, by the way, originally started the policy of dam removal in America. He was a member of the Trilateral Commission, as was Bill Clinton and Al Gore. What a cozy little trio they made. Dam removal was part of the Trilateral Commission's plan to implement technocracy in favor of capitalism and free enterprise because it would reduce the abundance of cheap hydroelectric energy, paving the way for more controllable alternative energy like wind turbines, solar panel farms, etc. This article starts, environmental groups have long pushed to bring down a huge dam along the Colorado River. They're suing the federal government, alleging it ignored climate science when approving a 20-year operating plan for the dam near the Arizona-Utah border. Glen Canyon Dam holds back Lake Powell, one of the largest man-made reservoirs in the United States. It and Lake Mead, which straddles the Arizona-Nevada line, are key to ensuring Colorado River water gets to the 40 million people and more than 7,000 square miles of farmland that depend on it. Drought and climate change already have reduced the river's flow, forcing 7 western states to adopt a plan earlier this year to ensure that lake elevations don't dip too low. The environmental groups, number 1, Save the Colorado, number 2, the Center for Biological Diversity and Living Rivers, have said climate change will lead to such scarcity of river water that Glen Canyon Dam could become inoperable. They sued the Bureau of Reclamation and U.S. District Court on Tuesday, aside from wanting the dam's 2016 operating plan to be revised, they want to force a discussion on draining Lake Powell and removing the dam. We need something new. It's not working, John Welshite, co-founder of Living Rivers, said Wednesday. It's not true river restoration. We're not getting sustainability for people or agriculture. We need long-term visionary thinking and discussion. And this lawsuit will help create that. Bureau of Reclamation spokesman Marlon Duke declined to comment on the lawsuit. The agency has disputed that it ignored climate science and said using Lake Mead as the primary or only reservoir on the Colorado River fell outside the scope of a study on Glen Canyon's operating plan. The plan allows for experimental releases of water to maintain hydropower and to mimic the river's natural flow. High-flow experiments are meant to build sandbars through the Grand Canyon to benefit native fish like the humpback chub, create beaches for river rafters, and protect archaeological sites. Glen Canyon Dam sits at the edge of Page, Arizona. Completed in 1964, it's the second tallest concrete arch dam in the United States behind Hoover Dam near Las Vegas. While Hoover Dam is anchored in solid volcano-baked basalt, Glen Canyon Dam spans a gorge lined with sandstone. Ann Castle was Assistant Secretary for Water and Science at the U.S. Interior Department when work began to revise Glen Canyon Dam's operating plan. She said the initial environmental review included a fairly extensive discussion of climate effects and questioned why environmentalists would want it revised under an administration often criticized for rolling back regulations. Jack Schmidt, director of the Center for Colorado River Studies at Utah State University, said the conversations that environmentalists are seeking already are happening about managing the entire Colorado River system. The Glen Canyon Dam plan was an incremental decision about how best to operate the dam under existing and old paradigms, he said. When negotiations start on what will guide the river beyond 2026, when current guidelines expire, he said, everything is back on the table. Well, I can guarantee you that the environmental groups that are now bringing up the destruction of the Glen Canyon Dam has nothing to do with the environment whatsoever. They say it does, of course, but the destruction of major hydroelectric dams around the country must be seen in the larger context of destroying one of the cheapest sources of energy that America has. And this is especially true up in the Northwest region, up in other areas of the country that have abundant rainfall. But in the case of Arizona, the Glen Canyon Dam and other dams in Arizona are critical sources of energy for people in Arizona. Well, I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. See you next time.